We go on the couch with psychotherapist Frank Rubino. Today's topic, the psychology of consumer behavior. All right, shoppers, get ready. The blue light special is just down the hall.
Hi. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Lucienne, yeah, that's actually right. The blue light special is one of those motivators that separates people from their money.
I miss the blue light special. I miss Kmart.
Yeah, we all kind of do.
Yeah. So separate us from our money. I don't know. We need to buy things. We need to consume. I know we consume too much, but where do you draw the line?
Yeah, well, you know, Lucienne, it's interesting. I'm not saying we should draw the line or where we draw the line necessarily, at least not for this conversation. But for on the part of the sellers, they want very much for people to come in and consume, to buy things they essentially don't need. And in the first world, developed worlds, people tend to spend a lot of money on things that they don't need. A small portion of our income goes toward meeting our basic needs. And the rest of it is feel good. It's things we are compelled to purchase. Something is on sale or a limited offer. The blue light special, to your point, comes on and encourages us to spend our money.
Why are we susceptible to that?
Well, we're susceptible to a number of things, as it turns out. And we are part of this is driven by a need to feel a certain way. So part of it is we have to send a message by the things that we purchase. So a brand name can signify that we have wealth or that we're successful, or we may make a purchase because we feel sad or depressed. We may do a lot of reasons that we may make some of these purchases. And one of them is when things are in limited supply. So we're hardwired as human beings to look for things that are limited in supply. Food from the very beginning was a limited supply for early human beings. So the ability to get food, even when you weren't hungry, was a bonus. You got it. You kept it. If you had to eat it, if you couldn't save it, you ate it. So there's a little bit of dopamine hit that we get when we find things that we think are in limited supply. So that's one of the reasons that we do this.
It kind of makes sense for the early days, though, when things were very limited and you knew if you were out on the hunt for food, you had to grab it while you could. That's not the case today. Grocery stores are on every corner and you can get just about everything until we've got that pandemic or something that causes us to say, oh my gosh, I need more toilet paper, milk, and bread.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because even this is a fairly new development in human existence. Up until this point, up until, you know, maybe just several decades ago, that wasn't the case. There was not food on every street corner. There weren't fast food restaurants everywhere. So our brains are constantly getting tricked because we are designed to eat when the food is available to us. Oh. But now food's available all the time. So we drive down the street and you see the golden arches and you smell the food that gets pumped out so you can smell the food cooking. And it makes us hungry even when we aren't. So our brains are always getting tricked by those kind of things.
So we can blame our forefathers for this?
Oh, no. I say we can blame the fast food industry for this.
Well, you talk about your brains being tricked and, you know, having to satisfy that need that's there. All right. So let's control that need then. And I think this could help in many aspects of our life. What do people need to do to quash that?
Well, I think, first of all, you don't fight against it in the way that you're fighting against other kinds of natural drives. I think you have to understand them, and then you can put them in their appropriate place. We have natural drives towards all kinds of things that we have to keep in check throughout our day. Aggression is one. We may have feelings of frustration, and it may anger us, but we have to put a hold on our tendency toward aggression. And we do that not by saying aggression is bad, but by recognizing there's a time and a place for aggression, and it has to be metered out in a way that's sort of commensurate with whatever vexes us. So you see small children, for example, don't have the ability to meter that out. They get frustrated. They go right to violence. You watch any 2-year-old, they are very, very quick to clobber somebody when they feel a little vexed. So part of this is understanding we don't have to deny ourselves food, but we have to kind of keep these things a little bit in check.
Fair to say, though, that description you gave, different people handle those kinds of things differently. And that's true of consumer behavior as well. Not everyone feels compelled to buy.
No, and I think this is where some of the discipline comes in and the recognition that we are driven to do these things. I remember a number of years ago, Bill O'Reilly, when he was at the top of his game, said one time, the more stuff I get, the more stuff I want. And so it made me recognize even somebody who has tens of millions of dollars still has that same urge. It's the same as the person who only has 2 nickels to rub together. It's this desire to get more. So I think it's a human condition rather than a status condition.
Would you say that discipline is the major concern here? And if so, let's talk a little bit about discipline and how we can gain more discipline in our lives, because it would help us in many aspects.
Sure. I think discipline is a big part, but I also think that there's a part of this consumerism that tricks us, this one of the psychological tricks that they play on us, is that it tells us that we make these purchases, it will make us feel better. So discipline's a part of it, but also knowledge is a part of it. In cognitively recognizing, if I make this purchase, I'm not necessarily going to feel better when I get home. It'll be fine for a day or two, and then it'll go in the pile with everything else.
But sometimes things make people feel really happy. When you look at that thing that you bought that you didn't necessarily need, if it makes you truly happy, is that so bad?
Well, it's not about things being bad or good. It's just about a condition. So, for example, people who are on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, when they make purchases that are expensive, but things that tend to make their lives easier, they report having a much longer appreciation for that purchase. It's when we buy things we can't afford and that also has no use for us. So we look at it in the moment we want, we coveted it, we purchased it, we get it home. It's just another thing to collect dust. It doesn't make us feel any happier. If it's something we've saved for, we wanted, we purchased, it may bring that joy for years.
All right, so what do we do to curb this?
Well, there's a number of things we have to do, and I think one is trying to come to a fuller understanding of the motivations behind our desire to make these purchases. If you find yourself the kind of person who can't pass up a good deal, you might want to reconsider that. You might want to take some time to think about, is this really a, number one, is it a good deal if I don't need it? Is it a good deal if I can't afford it? And maybe where the discipline part comes in is giving ourselves a budget. A friend of mine's growing up, his dad used to call it his mad money, sort of money he just spent when he was, you know, whatever. And staying within those boundaries that help us stave off the depression and that buyer's remorse that comes later.
Is this the same thing that's going on with people who overeat or who smoke or who do drugs or anything like that, where it's an obsession?
Yeah, okay, so a little bit. So the food thing is interesting because it's also a need for us. So that's where that gets a little odd. The smoking is interesting because we're also dealing with nicotine, which is extraordinarily addictive as a physical compound. So I would say that these things are similar in nature. They are for sure similar in nature because they push on, they push the button of our drives and the things that we need. Some of this is about anxiety, that I don't know where my next meal is going to come from. Maybe emotional needs. I need to feel connected in some ways. And so the food helps satiate that feeling of loneliness, or a purchase makes me feel good in the moment. And I think if you recognize what these things are doing for you, then you can start to kind of take your foot off the gas in pursuing them.
So isn't it true then that you're trying to cover up something? In other words, not cover up like you want to hide it, but that you haven't unpacked your feelings, your deep feelings that you can do when you're under therapy, for instance?
I think so. And sometimes it doesn't even take that much to recognize where these things come from. So, for example, somebody who grows up with very little goes on to become a bit of a hoarder. Okay, it becomes it's pretty short walk from one of those places to another. Or somebody who's food insecure has problems with relationships. Yeah, it makes sense. There's attachments that are important for us, the developmental markers we have to hit. So, yeah, I think that certainly these are things that through good therapy, and good self-reflection, being open to it, these are things that can absolutely be undone.
All right, bring it home for everyone as we talk about the psychology of consumer behavior.
I would say it's no different than when we vote for things or when we purchase things. Make a good decision about your purchases. Stay away from impulse purchases to the extent that you can. Don't overextend yourself. And wait. If you find something that you like, come back in a day or two and think, do I still feel the same way about it? If so, okay, make the purchase. But certainly don't spend the rent money chasing down these moments of joy.
Isn't pausing in life a beautiful thing? If more of us did that, if we waited, if we didn't be so quick to react to someone and say something we didn't want to say, life would be so much better.
Yeah, and the divorce attorneys would be out of work. Sure. Well, you know what? I might be out of work.
Yeah, really? You might want to try it, though, when it comes to overpurchasing. Do you really need it? Think about it. Thanks so much to Frank Rubino, psychotherapist. He practices out of Plymouth, Michigan. You can find him by Googling Frank Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O, and the words Psychology Today. He has a wonderful bio on that landing page. I'm Lucy Ann Lance, and this is Ann Arbor's Talk Station, 1290 WLBY.